With the power of the internet connecting Cape Girardeau and Kansas City, Missouri, we bring you the marvelous Jesse and Chris. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Chris.
And we're here to talk about comics and junk.
We are here to talk about comics, less about junk.
Hopefully.
Hopefully very little about junk, because we have so much to talk about comics.
That's true. There's so much to talk about. But we'll go ahead and get started with your personal favorites, the questions. Let's see. This week we have Kevin Redbeard Shankelberg, our old friend from Cape Mo.
Best man at my wedding, in fact.
Yes.
Generally a pretty cool dude.
Pretty cool dude all around. If you guys listen to the GameStop show, you got to hear him a little bit on there. All right, so his first question. In the Batman universe, what is one of your personal favorite major story arcs that include all or almost all major characters?
So not Battle for the Cowl, because that was pretty bad. it feels like Battle for the Cowl, like they like wanted to throw an event in, like, and Grant Morrison was probably like, no, I'm just going to do my return of Bruce Wayne thing and just do my Batman and Robin comic. No, but they had to do the Battle for the Cowl. They had to do it. That one was not good. No Man's Land is really good.
He actually listed that as his personal favorite.
No Man's Land is excellent. For those of you who aren't familiar with No Man's Land, there's a storyline where Gotham has a big earthquake. And then the city just kind of goes to hell because of all the crime. And the U.S. government basically declares it like, quote unquote, no man's land. Like, they're not going to come in and help. So it's kind of like, it has like a post-apocalyptic vibe. Like, it's like the second half of Dark Knight Rises, kind of. There's a whole thing with everybody controlling territory and like tagging stuff with spray paint, but it involves pretty much everybody. I cannot remember. I think it's Cassandra Cain premieres as Batgirl in that one for a little bit.
That sounds right, because that's when the shit happens with their mask, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's really good. What else? I like Nightfall. It's super 90s, but it's really good for being super pouchy. Lots of pouches in that. Do you have any favorites, Jesse, that include the entire Bat family?
I really like the some of the newer stuff. I like a whole lot. Like the Death of the Family was really good. I liked Killing Joke. I thought that one was a really solid one, but I don't think that included the whole Bat family. I think that was just a...
It was literally Batman, Batgirl, not in her guise as Batgirl, and Jim Gordon, I believe. I don't think Robin was in that.
Right, yeah, I didn't think so either.
They might have been between Robins at the time.
Yeah, that's very possible. They had so many. No Man's Land was really, really good. Yeah, Chris already went over that one, so you guys gotta... If you haven't read that one, definitely check it out. It's really good.
It's four paperbacks. Like, it's a long story.
Yeah. See, I'd probably say Death of the Family and No Man's Land are two of my favorites that include the whole family. I just, mostly, the main reason I like Death of the Family, like, it's not a long story arc, but it's really interesting, and it definitely has the most frightening looking Joker in the history of Bat comics.
Yeah, he's really creepy in that.
Uh-huh. With,
like, the face glued back on.
Not even glued. He attached, like, he's stapled straps onto it. He's wearing his face as a mask.
That's true.
Oh, it's so messed up looking. It is great. Nah, I love it. But yeah, that's... Yep, so that's those. And then his part two. Robin, what is happening? Is there a major story arc that people need to be involved in right now?
Well, in December there will be. In December they're doing the big crossover. It is interesting that it's a crossover that does not... With Batman characters, that does not involve Batman. Like, I'm fairly certain Batman does not cross over with it. Detective Comics does. But the flagship Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo Batman, I believe does not cross over with Robin War. But it seems like Robin War is kind of what it sounds like, because right now there are multiple entities who can claim to be Robin. There's Grayson, who is not Robin right now, but, you know, it was at some point. Right. There is Robin, Son of Batman, which is about Damien. And there's Red Hood and the Outlaws. Red Hood and Arsenal.
Yeah, I was about to say, they changed it now to Red Hood / Arsenal.
Red Hood / Arsenal. And then there's the new comic, We Are Robin, that a lot of people like. I've not read any We Are Robin, but it's a bunch of kids who are kind of like from the streets of Gotham who are all claiming the mantle of Robin and sort of fighting as a group. And I think I think the general thing about Robin War is they're just going to clash. So it's actually a really good time to be a Robin fan.
Right. I mean, and pick your Robin, really. You like Dick Grayson, you can read Grayson. I thought it was a really stupid idea, but everybody's been telling me Grayson's actually been pretty solid.
It's apparently amazing. I've only gotten some Grayson from, I read Midnighter, and Grayson's been sort of guest starring because they have frequent crossovers, Midnighter and Grayson. People love it, though.
Yeah. If you like Jason Todd, Red Hood and the Arsenal, if you like Tim Drake, he's actually the new Batman Beyond. He's gotten moved up to the future. You might need to do a little bit of back research to figure out why he's there. But from what I understand, you don't have to enjoy the storyline. If you just accept that Tim Drake's in the future and he's now Batman Beyond, then you're good. And then Batman and Robin Eternal, which is a sequel to the Batman Eternal series, just started up, like, I think last week.
Right. It's going to be like Batman Eternal, except half as long. It's only going to be 26 weeks.
Right.
As opposed to 52, which is probably for the best. Those weekly series get kind of, like, I always think I'm going to love them. And even if they're good, I just get, like, behind and burnt out. And
because that's so much reading. Like, and especially if you're someone like me, I usually wait like 2 to 3 weeks and then I get caught up on all my comics. If you do that with like a weekly series, then yeah, you're going to get bogged down pretty quickly. Suddenly you're going to look and you've got like 6 issues in back stock. You're like, oh no.
Right. I think like it looks good too. The art looks really, really excellent. And the writing pedigree is solid. I think I might wait till there's an inevitable Comixology sale and I can just spend $26.
Right. Or trade it somewhere.
It's really cool though, because it's there's some flashback stuff in it. I've read a little preview that came on Batman Day. I really want to get it. It's just I can't. I know I'm not going to be able to read it.
There's just so much.
but it's interesting because I feel like a couple of years ago, like I wanted to read some Robin stuff and was like, oh, I can't read anything. Robin's dead and the other Robins are all like on teams that I don't care about.
Yep. It's
the complete opposite now. Like there's Robin all over the place.
There's Robin everywhere. And there's the other one you mentioned, Robin, Son of Batman, is about Damien. So he's back to life now and doing stuff. And that's actually a whole new Son of Batman series, I think, that just started up a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
It has not been long.
Yeah, so that's actually a pretty good one to jump in on. And I don't think there's no Batman at all in that one. It's just Robin trying to figure Robin shit out. Well, Damian trying to figure Damian shit out, I guess.
Which, if I know Kevin Schenkelberg, and I like to think I do, that's right up his alley. He once told me, and I quote, "I like Robin as a separate figure." Which is not a whole lot of people do, so he's kind of pretty interesting there. Yeah, well, I'm glad they got a comic that can suit him.
Yes, so there you go, Kevin.
We Are Robin looks really interesting, but again, I would read all of these if DC had their own unlimited thing.
Right, they just DC Marvel Unlimited is a thing, and it's awesome. You should really get on that.
Right. So that was our first question, first and second questions.
Yes, that was the two parts to the first question. There we go.
All right. What's our next question?
Next question is from Dalton Mankey. He asks, Hasbro has announced a TV show Rouge figure recently. What are some of your favorite superhero outfits and that haven't aged well? So. I tried to find the Rouge figure, Mr. Mankey, and I was unsuccessful. It was such an obscure character from Teen Titans days. I was really surprised to see they made a character. And then I figured you must have misspelled rogue. Which, Chris, I believe the silence from Chris is him steaming, as that's one of his bigger pet peeves in comic books. Maybe. Or maybe Chris is just, completely disappeared. Chris, are you there, buddy?
Oh, Jesse, I'm so sorry. I did disappear momentarily. I'm not mad about it. It's just fun to give everybody crap. But, okay. She was actually in the Teen Titans animated series, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I guess the first part isn't really a question so much as it is just telling us, by the way, they released a Rogue figure.
Well, that's cool.
And that is cool, and I do like the 90s Rogue. As ridiculous as all of the 90s X-Men are, like, for nostalgia's sake, I still love their hero outfits. But, yeah, some of your favorite superhero outfits that haven't aged well. And for me, that's pretty much the entire cast of the X-Men from the 90s.
I know, every Jim Lee redesign. Just none of them aged well.
Mm-mm.
I mean, like, I feel like everybody at this point has had, like, a costume redesign. So it's really hard to... And the ones who haven't are, like, classic. Like, well, even... never mind. Batman's been redesigned a million times. Even Superman's had a redesign, but I don't really like his redesign that much. I liked the red underpants outside. apparently that's coming back in the form of a different Superman. Comics. Aww. Comics. But what other sort of... Havoc's outfit for the longest time with the weird hat. But again, he doesn't have that anymore. It's been redesigned. So that's... that's tough. If we're just not going redesigns and talking about costumes that when we look back on are ridiculous, I could definitely do a little bit of that. Batman in the, I think, 70s or 80s when his ears were super long.
Oh, yeah.
That's real good. I think Harley Quinn's redesign outfit already looks bad. I think it's been redesigned yet again, but where she just had like the corset.
Has it really? Hold on.
If not, it probably needs one.
Because yeah, she did have like she had a redesign in her own comic series. Are you talking about like maybe the Roller Girl outfit, or are you talking about the?
Oh, whichever one. Just like she's literally just wearing like a corset for a top.
Oh, that's. Isn't that the Injustice series where she's doing the corset?
Oh, I don't know. Well. That, like, not a fan of that one. They redesigned it again, so it's finally good. But for a while, Starfire had a really bad outfit.
Yes.
It's good. It's good again with the new Starfire series. Who else had a really bad outfit? I always think the Flash's outfit's kind of goofy.
And they haven't really changed that much.
They haven't
at all.
Really changed it, but like the lightning ears are always kind of silly. And I love Silver Age Flash. There's not a Silver Age DC comic that I love more than The Flash. In fact, I spent some time recently, Jesse, tracking down those. It's called Showcase Presents, which mm-hmm. is those big, thick black and white comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Of The Flash from the Silver Age, because it's the cheapest way to read them. And they are excellent, but the costume's real silly, and it's still kind of just that way.
Okay, by Silver Age, he lost the metal plate, didn't he?
The metal plate. That was the
Jay Garrick Flash, like of the Golden Age, had the weird helmet. Like, do you know
right,
what I'm talking about?
Barry Allen in the Silver Age, just that straight spandex with the lightning bolt ears.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just I couldn't remember if that had changed at all yet. I actually found this fun little picture here of just the way the Flash's costume has looked from 1940 to the year 2000, and yeah, very very little change.
Not it seems a whole
lot. It seems the lightning bolt on his arm is steadily getting higher.
Oh, it's gonna be on his face soon, and then he'll have two lightning bolts on his face.
Right. Other than that, yeah, and of course, you know, the Jay Garrick Flash is far different because, again, metal helmet Flash.
Right. And I know Wally West has a slightly different Flash outfit. I am not enough of a discerner to be able to tell the difference super easily. So, like, in Final Crisis, when the two of them were in the same panel, I was just like, meh.
Oh yeah. Well, doesn't Wally West have a mostly yellow outfit?
No, it's still red. They're all red. Everybody wears red if you're a Flash. So much red. Let's see. What other kind of outfits? There was a bit where Iron Man had this had these neck muscle cord things in his costume. Like, it actually looked like little bitty cords of muscles. I think it was in the 90s when everything had to be muscly, and that looked god awful. So I'm glad that that hasn't happened, but that didn't age well.
Yeah, because they tried to make his wasn't Iron Man for a little while. They were trying to make it where he had like an iron helmet and iron shoulder pads, but the most of the rest of them was just a spandex outfit.
Well, I just remember it looking really like cordy, like almost like Steel, you know, the superhero.
DC.
He kind of looked Steel-esque, and it was it was not good.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think.
By the way, every single one of Hank Pym's outfits doesn't age well. looked good.
That's pretty true. It's very much like he just kept changing his outfit to the times, and even like when it would change to whatever modern era it was, it still looked bad.
Right, like his Goliath outfit, terrible. Listeners, if you ever want a fun time, look up Goliath. It was Hawkeye. So Clint Barton, Goliath. For a while, Clint Barton had size changey powers, but his outfit is awful. They got rid of it real fast, and that was probably for the best.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because I am familiar with that. I never actually read anything about it. I just saw it in like some worst outfits of all time list a long time ago.
It's bad. I've read some of those comics, and I was like, "What is going on with Clint Barton?" Because I think that's that way during the Kree-Skrull War, and I just wanted to go in and read the Kree-Skrull War, and I was like, "What is going on with Clint Barton? Why is he like a rainbow man with his midriff showing and all that jazz?" It's so bad.
And he had that classic 90s, like, helmet covers everything but the hair.
But this was in the 70s, which makes it worse. man. Yeah, so that's a lot of my least favorite outfits. Gambit takes the cake, though. Gambit's is the worst. Oh. I know there's a lot of Gambit lovers than our listeners. And I'm sorry you love a complete creep, but his outfit's awful.
I love Gambit.
I know you love Gambit. I know.
Dude, when I was a little kid, I loved that outfit so much. Like, I really wanted a trench coat and a staff so bad.
And the fingerless gloves for when you're thieving stuff.
So I can make sure that my fingerprints are on everything, but not my palm.
Not your palm print.
Just the fingerprints.
Maybe Gambit burned off his fingerprints long ago.
I think that's a thief thing to do. Like, you burn your fingerprints.
In the Thieves Guild.
The Thieves.
That's how Gambit says it.
That is how Gambit says it.
Well, yeah, okay. So what's our last question?
Well, we technically have two more. One of them is not so much comic related. Shannon's, though, is the second to last with, what are your thoughts on American comics versus Japanese manga? What's the biggest differences between them, and which do you prefer?
So I don't think I read more American comics, but I think it's just because I haven't been into a lot of Japanese comics recently. I mean, I used to be a lot. What are the differences? A lot of what really defined American comics was, the period of the Comics Code Authority. So when they weren't, well, like when a lot of things weren't allowed, and that's kind of what killed all the genres but superheroes. If you've ever thought why there are so many superhero comics and why there's a whole lot of not anything else, if you were like in the 40s and 50s, there was all sorts of genres of comics. Westerns, horror comics, science fiction comics, like everything you could think of. But the Comics Code Authority, like, very blatantly, like, had like things you couldn't do. Like, I think you couldn't do werewolves. Like, you just, like, you, one of the things you just could not do is mention werewolves in your comic. And that's like, weird. It's real weird, but they just wanted to kill the horror comics.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of like Japanese comics tend to have more variety, I'd say, at least as of right now.
And maybe not as of right now, Maybe at, like in terms of in history. Because like right now through, what am I thinking? Through like indie or not indie, through non-Big Two publishers like Image and Dark Horse and blah, 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 you can find almost any genre you want anymore. But for the longest time, it was like superhero comics or bust.
Yeah, and I mean, even like, unless you do want to check out those indie ones, and even some of those indie ones still have a little bit of like superhero, superpowered stuff a little bit.
Oh yeah, but for sure. I mean, I like it. I read Invincible every month, and it's a superhero comic. But I mean, you can still get stuff like The Walking Dead or American Vampire or Witches for your horror comics. There's a bunch of sci-fi comics that I wouldn't say are explicitly superhero.
Shit, like, you can jump on Star Wars.
you can get Star Wars, Saga Science Fiction. Yeah.
They've even done a bunch of like cartoons. Like Cartoon Network has a ton of comic books out there now.
Oh, for sure. And IDW does like every cartoon you've ever wanted in comic book form.
Yeah, like there's Adventure Time. Like My Little Pony has a comic book.
Gem from the 80s has a comic book.
Right.
Yeah, so it's almost anything. That wasn't always the case, though. But like Japanese comics have had like varying genres for a while, and they don't really have anything that's explicitly superhero. They have things that are superhero-esque. Like a lot of the shonen comics are fairly similar to superhero comics. Yeah. Like I wouldn't say Bleach and Naruto are very different than like a superhero comic.
That's true. Yeah, they definitely have just that. Well, especially Naruto. It seems like everybody in there, you know, they have their own little superpowers.
Like, oh yeah, for sure. Or like One Piece. One Piece is a superhero comic.
Oh yeah, like they're not, you know, superhero in the same way that Western comics are. So
right, I mean they're going on an adventure, but it's very like I've got my powers. And although it's interesting how a lot of like powers in Japan, Cyclops has optic beams. He shoots optic beams. In Japan, if you had an optic beam power, you would develop it and be able to change it over time, and they would each have their own cool individual names every time you used them. Like Optic Blast Omega or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because
all their powers have names.
It's very much a Japanese thing, and they have to yell out the name of the power before they use it. That's how right. You activate it.
Except Full Metal Alchemist doesn't have that, which is kind of interesting.
Yes, Full Metal Alchemist, that's also a little bit of a... And that's another thing I think that's kind of unique about the superhero comics in Japan. They're all kind of like, I guess you could say, sort of like X-Men to a degree, in that it's not unique to just a handful of people. Like, a significant portion of the population has powers, if any portion does.
Yeah, yeah. Naruto, that's definitely true. And
Full Metal Alchemist, that's definitely true.
There's
like,
lots of people with powers. In Bleach, while the public doesn't have it, like there's like 40 characters plus that have powers in Bleach.
And they kept finding more and more. Like,
yep. Everybody's a Shinigami. You can tell I haven't read anything new recently because I don't know anything newer than that. last thing I kind of read was Attack on Titan, which is kind of a horror comic, but also a little bit of an adventure comic. I think Japanese comics have generally way more unique premises.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, not always. Like, there's some American comics with some really interesting premises, but like, like a lot of American comics are like, this thing's happening in normal life. Oh, and also there's this weird thing happening behind the scenes or something. Like even like in Black Science, it's our normal world, but they go into some crazy alternate world using crazy science. But like Attack on Titan doesn't take place on Earth. We live in walls. We don't remember anything else, which is cool. I think some of the premises in Japanese comics are really interesting.
Yeah, the only downside to a lot of those like premises, like you hear like a plot point or a premise to a show or a Japanese manga, however you want to go with it, and it's interesting how the culture can ruin a good premise sometimes. Like basically making it, you know, too fan servicey, or it almost ends up being like outright porn, or there's some little like trick to it that just makes it not as good, like trying to think of an example immediately. The Ikki Tuzen That was one that I can think of that has a really cool premise. They get their powers from their ancestors that come in the form of these earrings or beads that they have to keep on their person. And it's a really, really cool premise. But, yeah, there's just, like, fan service everywhere. Like, every 5 seconds there's an upskirt shot or something like that. And I just had to turn it off. Because I'm like, this is not interesting to me at all. Like, I like...
No, I know.
I like naked girls as much as the next guy, but come on.
This just makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. There was another one recently that just sounded amazing.
I don't know
amazing.
If I would say that American comics don't do that. It's not quite, I don't think it seems quite as blatant to us. But I mean, like, female superheroes have been running around in skimpy costumes for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, you're not wrong.
And it's recently gotten somewhat better, but like, or like the costumes where it's like, are they wearing clothing or is this painted on, you know, things like that.
Well, shit, there was even the, like you were talking about earlier, Starfire's costume before her current like solo issue.
There's no way that would have actually worked as a costume.
No, it was basically like two thin strips that covered her nipples and went around to her back and then like something to barely cover her vagina. That was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of going back to the Japanese comics. A lot of the differences are cultural. For example, I don't think there's a whole lot of like the whole like school kids stuff going on in Japanese comics.
Yeah.
Like the school aspect seems important, and for a lot of like. For a lot of American comics, like they'll have schools in them, but I feel like you don't always get to know their teachers or like every single member of the class. But in Japanese comics, sometimes and I think more often than not, those sorts of aspects become very important. But I think that's very cultural. Jesse, there's another difference. You want to know the other difference?
What's the other difference?
Do you want to know the other difference, Jesse?
I absolutely do, more than anything in the world.
They read from right to left. Ah! Oh, that's, I'm sorry.
That was quite a build-up. That was
quite a build-up. I generally read more American comics. Not to say that there aren't good manga. I've been borrowing and reading Lone Wolf and Cub, which is manga, I think, from the 70s, from a friend of mine. It's really excellent. It's super Japanese, though, because it's about a samurai without a lord anymore. So, you know, cultural differences there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely also, you know, stick more towards Western stuff. Like, there have been manga I've read in the past. Like, I read the shit out of some Full Metal Alchemist. That's still top dog. Although, when it comes to manga and stuff like that, I generally watch more anime than I do read manga.
Well, it's effectively the cartoon version. Oh, that's another thing that I feel like is unique. Direct adaptations of comic books into cartoons on a wide scale. That does not happen in America.
Nope. And it doesn't. And it rarely happens successfully when it does happen in America.
I think the closest thing we got was X-Men, but it was like you'll get full full manga adapted into anime. I mean, like Death Note and the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. That's almost like a shot-for-shot comparison.
That's actually another huge, significant, major difference between Japanese manga and American comics.
Oh, yeah?
Japanese manga has endings.
They do have endings. They are not serial. And, like, that used to be... You know, now we do get comics with endings. Like, Image and Image Comics, you know, you get some stuff that has ends, right?
Right.
Like, your Vertigo comics, like, Fables finally ended. Why the Last Man ended, Sandman ended, but way more. There's only like a few comics that don't seem to have any sign of ending anytime soon in Japan. Like One Piece might never end, but everything else pretty much does, and usually like in a timely fashion, like enough to get like a 26 episode season out of it or something.
Right. Yeah, because that was the other. Just you know, that was why I was thinking it was significant, because I generally like watching anime that aren't, you know, hundreds and hundreds of episodes long, that I can, you know, just watch a story happen. And yeah, the going back the Shonen series, I guess we can really say that's the closest example to Western comics and their culture, because they do mostly have superheroes, and they're the one, like the Shonen series are all the ones that are going just for seemingly ever, except I think Naruto ended.
Yeah, Bleach is going to end soon. Sorry, Jesse.
But yeah, then they also have, didn't, does Shonen do Fairy Tail?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one's still very much ongoing. They did Dragon Ball and Took Dragon Ball Z. It
did end.
Yep. Sort of. Like, it's still, there's so many offshoots. Yeah. But yeah, that's definitely a really, I would say, significant one, because it seems like any of the series in American culture, like a short comic book series that has an ending, like I think Fables had 175 issues.
Right.
And that's the shortest one I can think of that was just a like a whole complete story.
I think Why the Last Man was only 40 or 50.
Okay. I guess I never read that one.
It's really good, Jesse. It's Brian K. Vaughan at his finest.
Huh. I might have to check that out. And then I heard, what's the project Scott Snyder's working on? Is that Witches?
Witches?
That he's doing?
Yep.
I hear that one's incredible. Keep meaning to check that out.
It is really good. I read the first issue. I need to read more. It's only 5 issues, and it's like a complete story. There's going to be more of them. But I think this one is like, I think the other ones are going to be not so much continuations. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right.
But it is like 5 issues, and you get a full and complete story.
So yeah, there's few examples of that, but it is certainly the exception as opposed to the norm. Whereas, yeah, there seems to be far more comics that actually end in Japanese manga.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And are made to end like way sooner.
Yes.
Like, you know, just like American superhero comics will never end. You will not see the end of Spider-Man.
Nope.
You and I will be dead, and Spider-Man will live on.
It will still be Peter Parker too.
Like, it will still be Peter Parker.
Yeah, and yeah, there will be somehow, like, he has aged, I guess, technically, but even still.
I think, like, 10 years.
Yeah, in the 60 years that he's been slinging webs,
yep.
He's aged 10.
Well, Jesse, that's all our questions for this week, so we can finally actually talk about non-questions.
Yeah! Which
we don't always get to. But listeners, first we wanted to start with a little bit from New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con didn't have a whole lot of like explosively amazing news this year, but they did have a few things. What do we want to start with?
I don't know. Let's. I know we can start with the thing I'm most disappointed in. Comixology was supposed to have an announcement at New York Comic Con about their all-you-can-eat subscription service, which Amazon teased about after they acquired the service. And, yeah, there was nothing.
Yeah, fun fact, they didn't say anything about it. Which, yeah. They didn't even, I don't even think they've commented on why they didn't say anything.
No, yeah, I even researched it, like, right before, you know, we started the show. It was like, you know, where is our Comixology announcement? And, yeah, nothing on the internet.
Yep, which is kind of a bummer. I was looking forward to that.
Yep.
Which it's interesting how they managed to do that and get a lot of people on board. But I don't know. Other news of note, Marvel announced several crossovers. Not necessarily events, although they teased Civil War II. Yay, I guess.
So I guess that tells us that the whatever's happening will not be resolved in Cap 3.
Yeah, Civil War 2, it looks like it is Iron Man versus Sam Wilson as the Falcon. There was like a postcard sent out to people, to comic book stores. It had like a 2 on it, and it had them like clashing. So it seems like probably Civil War 2. Who knows? Maybe it's something else too. Maybe we're having Siege 2.
Siege 2.
Infinity Gauntlet 2.
There's so many 2s that it could possibly be.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That's not a crossover, Jesse.
I know. That's the point.
It's just as Iron Man and Sam Wilson.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Iron Man versus Sam Wilson.
there's Spider-Women. Did you see that? Where it looks like it's going to be Spider-Woman, Silk, and Spider-Gwen crossing over for a few issues. Ooh. I'm a little bummed about that because I like that Spider-Woman separate because I like me my Jessica Drew.
Well, but she's still getting her own solo. Like, she still has her own solo thing. Like,
she does have her own solo. It's just going to be a little bit of crossover.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see, like, with Spider-Gwen, because I thought that she was still going to be in her own self-contained universe. Or are they moving over to the main universe?
No, that is still true, sir. Whatever this crossover is, it's going to be multiversal.
Huh. So I guess it probably will be part of the Web Warriors series, I'm going to guess?
No, apparently just, as far as I know, it's just Spider-Gwen, Silk, and Spider-Woman.
Weird.
And there's going to be like a single issue, like Spider-Women number one and Spider-Women number two. You know they like to do bookends.
Right.
To those crossovers, yeah.
So it'd be like Spider-Women number one, each of their own individual issues, and then Spider-Women number two.
Yeah, I think so. And they're doing the same thing with Avengers. There's going to be an Avengers crossover, and it has the greatest title ever. I think it's, what is it? It's really, really, like, long. Let's see if, oh God, I'm searching Avengers crossover, and I'm getting fan fiction. Avengers Standoff is, like, the short name, but it's, like, Avengers Standoff at Pleasant Hill or something. Which is funny. They're gonna go to a gated community, which is kind of fantastic.
That's amazing.
The one shot special is called Standoff! !! Assault on Pleasant Hill Alpha number one.
I know. I love it. Taking it
too far. And it's continuing various Avengers titles in March and April. It's going to cross over Sam Wilson, Captain America, all new, all different Marvel, or I'm sorry, all new, all different Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, New Avengers, and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic. I will not buy all of those. They can deal. Yep. And then is there any more? I think that might be it. Yeah, I think that's it as far as I know. Haven't announced anything X-Men-wise, although you do know, I think we talked about it last time, the X-Men 92 is getting its own.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week.
So well, good.
2 weeks ago. Yeah.
So that's most of the Marvel news that they announced. They showed Jessica Jones at New York Comic Con, and it's apparently really, really damn good. Like, people think it's, like, the best.
Yep.
So November 20th can't quite come soon enough, because I'm pretty excited about it.
And, I mean, that was really nuts. They only showed, like, the first episode. And everybody was just ranting and raving about how amazing and incredible and awesome it is. And yeah, I'm really, really excited now.
Yeah, so it should be pretty good. On the DC side, DC announced that they're making a Dark Knight Returns prequel to go with the Dark Knight 3 : The Master Race. Yikes. I know. But it's written by the same team, but it seems to have a bigger art team. And it's a one shot, but it's a big. It's like a 48 pager. I haven't read anything after Dark Knight Returns. I never read Dark Knight Strikes Back. I'm probably not gonna get Dark Knight 3. They did do a little preview of Frank Miller drawing the Atom in either Dark Knight Returns or the Dark Knight prequel. And it was really good. Like, Frank Miller recently, I have not been a fan of, but this art was like. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm back on the Frank Miller train. I mean, kind of.
Sort of. Yeah, because I did used to be a huge fan of, like, we've talked about it before, I used to like Frank Miller art a lot.
It just seems to have kind of lost. It's gotten, like, more and more sort of sketchy and out there. But
right.
I don't know. Maybe it's just what he's trying to do. It's just something I'm not a fan of. Also, Greg Capullo is leaving Batman after issue 51 for a little bit to work on a project with Mark Miller that is undefined. I don't think it's been announced whether or not this project with Mark Miller is for any particular company. I would read Mark Miller if Greg Capullo was drawing it, though. I definitely would. And I haven't been a very recent fan of Mark Miller, but Greg Capullo draws really, really good stuff.
Yes.
Which this seems to indicate, though, Jesse, that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are going to stay on Batman still for the foreseeable future. Because at least up until 51, and then Scott Snyder said Greg Capullo would return like a year later. Yep. So we'll be getting Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo Batman for a long-ass time.
Which is really, really exciting to me.
Totally fine. Totally fine.
A-okay with that.
Yep. That they didn't have a whole lot else there at the DC. At least not that I'd consider to be big news. So New York Comic Con, not a lot of news, really.
Nope. Yeah, it's sort of sad. Like, it's supposed to be the second biggest comic event of the year, and eh.
I'm sure there was a lot of TV stuff.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Because they did the Killing Joke announcement, sort of. Like, right. WB signed off on an R rating for the new Killing Joke movie. But
so, the Killing Joke is a good comic. Like, it's an important comic. But there are some changes I would like to see, and I'm not sure if making it R-rated would do those. There's always been sort of controversy about what the Joker did to Batgirl in that. And I think it's kind of bad, right? Like, did you ever read the Alan Moore thing where Alan Moore was asking his editor, like, hey, for this Joker story, can I cripple Batgirl? And his editor, like, said, like cripple her. I'm editing that. He said something worse. But, was totally fine with it. Like, didn't even care. And so Alan Moore did, but even Alan Moore regrets, like, paralyzing Batgirl in the Killing Joke. And if we were to do it in the Killing Joke cartoon, I would really rather it happen as if Batgirl's, like, in her Batgirl costume, like, actually fighting. Because she just sort of opens her door and gets shot.
Right. And it doesn't make really good, like, a climactic premise, I guess.
Right. Well, it just denies her agency. And I know I'm getting real soapboxy and about her. But I'm really into Batgirl as a character now, and I think that's like the low point. Because like that's not even a Batgirl comic. It's just like she's shot for motivation for other characters, which is a real bummer.
And right. They sacrificed the only strong female character they had at the time to give motivation to the other male characters.
Right, which is known as fridging in the comic book industry. That's what we call it. Which is, I don't know, and I think that I don't know how you could do the story without that. I'm sure there's a way. The takeaway, sorry Jesse, I'm dying over here.
Please don't die.
Please don't die. The takeaway for me from that story, is really it's the whole Jim Gordon thing, like. Jim Gordon could have turned evil because it's the whole like one bad day thing, which that's kind of a neat theme, but I don't like admit they had to involve Batgirl in a way that I'm not super okay with. So I'm iffy about this particular animated series. It seems like DC's been getting some really really dark animated stuff recently.
Yeah. Did you actually watch the Gods and Monsters Justice League?
I did not. Did you see it?
Yes.
Is it pretty dark?
It's pretty dark. It's pretty dark. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a Bruce Timm storyline, and I'm a huge fan of Bruce Timm.
Yeah, Bruce Timm's great.
Just fantastic. And it's definitely dark. Lots of death, quite a bit of blood. It was much darker than I thought it was going to be.
Hmm.
Well, it's not near as dark, though, as the... Did you watch any of the the preview stuff for it?
No, I didn't really keep much track of it. I know that's bad.
Yeah. Well, there was one in particular that I recommend looking up. There is a little Harley Quinn short that they did before the movie came out. They did a few more, but the Harley Quinn one in particular made me think that this was going to be a really, really dark film, where instead it was just a dark film. But that short was, holy crap, that was messed up.
Okay. So that was their big news. Although, let Jesse and I reiterate, it's not necessarily going to be an R rating. They are just open to the possibility. They have the approval. Yes.
Yep.
It could be. It could be R rated. We shall have to see.
Indeed, we shall. I don't know. I'd like to see how they would do it with a modern spin on it.
Yeah, like it's very much a product of its time, right?
Right.
Like it is very 80s dark. People gave less of a crap about women in comics at that point, sort of deal. So yeah, I agree. I would like to see how they could do that. Also, I'm sure Alan Moore is fuming, which is kind of funny. Because Alan Moore hates it when you adapt anything he does.
Right. Because, right. You know, Alan Moore.
Because Alan Moore. Man yells at clap.
So, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much it for New York Comic Con news then. I guess we can do... Man, we still have so much time. I don't think
we've ever... How much time do we have?
We have 15 minutes left.
15 minutes? We can talk about last week's comics.
We can talk about last week's comics. All right. I'm so excited.
Last week was a really big week in the comic book industry here, folks. Especially on the Marvel side, because all new, all different Marvel premiered with its very first issues. We had Secret Wars number 6. We had like every Star Wars title that wasn't Kanan the Last Padawan. There was still a bunch of DC stuff. Midnighter and Omega Men, which are my two favorite DC comics other than Batman, came out. And they were excellent. Yeah, so what did you get last week, Jesse?
Last week, yeah, I got Secret Wars number 6. I got The Amazing Spider-Man number 1. Because they threw that one out there. I got the All New, All Different Point 1. Let's see, what else was last week? I think last week had the latest issue of Harley Quinn, but there's nothing new. It's just, that's something I've been reading. Yeah. So the only thing from All New, All Different, though, I picked up last week was Amazing Spider-Man. I wanted to pick up Doctor Strange, but I was going to wait for your review on that one.
And wait you shall. I've picked it up and read it, and I have things to say about it.
Oh, boy.
So what did you think of Amazing Spider-Man? That's one that we both read.
Yes. I liked it quite a bit.
It was super fun.
Yes.
It was such a fun comic, and I hadn't read Spider-Man in a while. I actually picked it up because my wife went, yeah, pick up Spider-Man. She'd heard there was a Spider-Woman preview in the back. Spider-Woman's her jam. Mm-hmm. But she's like, I like Spider-Man. Yeah, pick it up. And she loved it too, but it was so much fun with this. And I don't know why he had the Spider-Mobile, but who cares? It was great.
And Mockingbird was in it, and that was really cool. And yeah, cause I like Mockingbird, and she has gotten very little publicity in the last long time.
Yeah. What happened to that? No one gives a crap about Mockingbird anymore. No. That's a bummer.
Yeah. They put her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and now, you know, suddenly everybody's like, oh, Mockingbird. Yeah. That's a character.
We can use that. Yeah, it was really cool. I liked the whole Prowler as another Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Doc Ock as in that weird robot guy.
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. That was a robot that was like a failed experiment when Doc Ock first took Peter Parker over. It was a failed experiment that Doc Ock re-engineered into his personal assistant.
Okay. And now he is maybe dwelling in there.
Right, and I guess because this is supposed to be 9 months after the events of Secret Wars.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess somewhere along the line, there was an update. Maybe Doc Ock had, you know, waiting somehow. I guess they're going to explain it more, surely, but guess who didn't stay dead? Good old Doc Ock.
The old Doc Ock. It was definitely cliffhanger-y.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I liked some of the previews. The Spider-Woman preview was really excellent. I really liked the Silk preview. Silk had really good art.
Yes. Yeah, I like the Silk arc a whole lot. And then I'm really interested to see what's going on between the Cat and Silk, because last I read in the comic books, they weren't friends.
Yeah, and, we'll have to see.
Because she was trying very hard to take out the two of them, like Silk and Spider-Man, because, you know, stuff happened. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what's going on there. And then Miles Morales, Spider-Man. That's going to be a good time, methinks.
Oh, yeah. That was a good book. That was worth the $6. Yeah. Unlike, I got Avengers number 0, not worth the $6. Even with a couple of good previews, it was just kind of a mess. It's the kind of thing, like, DC put out all their sneak peeks for DCU for free. Marvel, yeah. Take note.
Yeah, this is one thing that DC definitely has you guys beat on, because I really don't like what I paid for All New, All Different Point 1, because I honestly didn't really know what I was, you know, what I expected going into it, but I was certainly not expecting previews for a bunch of your All New, All Different books.
Yeah, I was really bummed out about that, actually.
Yep.
However, Doctor Strange was really excellent. Some people said it was outside of Doctor Strange's character, because he kind of is a little, but it's in his head, and that's what I thought about. Because Doctor Strange always comes off kind of serious and like he knows what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this, he's kind of like seems a little uncertain, but like, but he still has that outward appearance of knowing what he's doing, which I liked a lot. It portrays him as somewhat of a womanizer, which if you don't think that's in his character, like you haven't read old Doctor Strange.
Yeah, before he became like the Sorcerer Supreme, like that was his bag. Like,
yeah, he's totally like a playboy. Yeah. Although he's the art is by our old friend Chris Bacalo, who you know did the Uncanny X-Men art recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's so suited for Doctor Strange. There's some weird like phantasmic scapes and like weird creatures. And all sorts of fun stuff. There's like Doctor Strange has a moment where he goes and visits some of the other practitioners of magic in like a magician bar, and that bar is really well done. It also guest stars in the background of some of the panels, some of his Uncanny X-Men characters.
Oh, it's like
a little Easter egg. But it's also setting up for some really interesting story stuff. Jason Aaron's always solid. I really recommend Doctor Strange number one. Also got Invincible Iron Man number one, which while I don't think was as good as Amazing Spider-Man or Doctor Strange, was really, really fun. It's Brian Michael Bendis and David Arquez. So Brian Michael Bendis is a wordy guy, right? Like,
yeah. Like it's even been made fun of like in other comic books. People have made fun of Bendis, like the amount of text or text he puts into bubbles.
He kind of tones it down a little.
Oh, really?
There's some bits where I clearly know that Bendis wanted to put words in, but he kind of let the art speak for itself.
Well, that's good, because it feels like I think he wants to write novels more than he does comic books.
Right, like, or TV.
Right. Yeah.
No, I completely get it. But no, it's really good. It's Iron Man. The whole deal is he's decided all these, like, all these kids have passed him up, like all these 20-something kids, which in fairly recent Iron Man comics is kind of true. And he's like, you know what? I need to do something to stay ahead of the curve. And he's also just doing Tony Stark stuff. He's on a date. Then he goes and investigates. Sorry. Goes and investigates crime in another country. It's pretty movie Tony Stark, but it was really good.
Yeah, is this the one where they're supposed to be doing, was that upcoming or current, where Mary Jane Watson's part of that now?
Nope, she'll show up in a bit, but not in this first issue.
Okay. Yeah, cause remember, there's a big bunch of people clamoring about that, like, why is Mary Jane in an Iron Man book, blah, 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 blah.
It's all Marvel Universe to me, man.
Yep. And that, speaking of the movie stuff, it definitely seems like they're taking that route in a lot of their art and a lot of how they're doing things in general. Like, the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. book is very much, from the preview I got in the All New, All Different Point One, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. book is almost a comic adaptation of the TV show, but with the events of the current Marvel universe.
No, that's completely it. And that's the way it's been. Like, there's been the S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
I actually didn't know there has been a S.H.I.E.L.D. book. I'm bad, I guess.
It's okay. But yeah, they're that's the way they've been going, man. They're trying to link those up, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know necessarily that they're trying to link them so much as they are, like I said, it's the characters just in the current Marvel universe where there are mutants and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of superpowered people that everybody knows about, as opposed to the show where there's Inhumans and the Avengers, and that's really it.
Right. I'd like to see how that would work. So I don't know. I'm probably not going to get the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. book, but I guess that's neat.
Yeah, I'm almost certainly not either, but I do like the show a whole lot. So, I mean, that was just kind of something neat.
Yeah, especially after that rocky first season.
Yeah, it definitely got better after season one. And then season three, the first two episodes have been great.
Right. So Secret Wars number six, what'd you think of this one? Number five was a little dull, a little expository.
Number six, I felt like they didn't get anything done.
Well, number five, they definitely didn't get anything done. Number six, yeah. I guess that's some neat setup. The Spider-Man scene where the two Spider-Mans break into the little
the power source room.
Yeah, and he's and they're like, "Well, you really want this burger?" And he's like, "Give the burger to me." That was excellent.
He's like, "So wait, where did you get that burger? Oh, I forgot I had it. What? Well, where did it come from?"
That was good. That was a good scene. I liked it. My pet peeve is that I don't know why all these characters are where they are, and I'd like that explained better.
Yeah, because it feels like I haven't read.
I mean, I know any why they're there. They got like teleported or whatever.
Right,
but. Like, it looks like Captain Marvel beat the crap out of Mr. Sinister and took it over his domain, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah, see, because I don't... Because Captain Marvel was... she was on one of the Rafts, wasn't she?
She was. Yeah, it was so... All the Raft people got teleported by Doctor Strange, and they're just in various spots. And I guess they're just trying to get back.
And I guess, like, they're in, like, the side shoot stories? Is that where we're missing, like, Captain Marvel having taken over that domain?
Apparently not. There was a scene in, I think, number 5 where Captain Marvel's punching Sinister in the face in, like, one panel.
Hmm. And yeah, I guess so and then the next time you see them, it's like she's taken over his domain.
She is calling the shots. I wish there would have been a more interesting... Well, I'm not saying it... I'm not saying this book's bad. I'm kind of nitpicking. But the two Mr. Fantastics, they're just suddenly working together, and I would have liked a little conflict there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a little bit of conflict, but they like met up and were like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, because I do feel like we missed an issue. Like, I was actually reading it, like, wait, this is number 5, or number 6, right? And I
I
read number 5. Okay, yeah. I did read 5. Here's 6.
By the way, did I not call that Ben Grimm was the Wall?
You did, in fact.
Called it, and he totally is. That's what got set up that was cool.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really cool, especially when he gets up. I'm like, oh,
well. He can just leave. He's gone now. He's gone. I think issue 7 is probably going to be explosive.
Yes. There's a lot of shit is going to go down. Especially, it has to. They've used 2 issues setting stuff up.
Right.
Like there has to be something going down in the next issue, which we won't get until late November.
Yeah, there's been a lot of delays with that book. They are really not wanting to switch art teams. So, it's, you know. Although, who knows? Maybe Jonathan Hickman's taking forever to write it, too. But yeah, there's a lot of delays with that book. I don't mind. If they would have delayed All New, All Different Marvel, I would have rioted. But from the books I read, I don't feel like anything got super spoiled.
No, and because it doesn't feel like they've spoiled anything from Secret Wars. A lot of it, what I'm reading, is just like we have a 9-month time lapse between... where everything went to shit and now where we're at.
Which is interesting. It's making me wonder, like, how much a Secret War is going to matter. But I guess we shall see.
We shall indeed see.
There were also 2 Star Wars books this week that I got. Star Wars number 10, I think. And then Journey. This is the longest Star Wars title ever. Journey to the Force Awakens, Star Wars Shattered Empire number 2.
Wow.
The Star Wars book was really excellent. This arc that Stuart Immonen has been drawing is really cool. So, Jesse, to spoil a little bit of this for you, Luke has been captured by a Hutt who likes capturing things that are related to the Jedi. And as someone who is kind of like a Jedi, this Hutt has captured him. He is being rescued by Chewbacca and C-3PO. Meanwhile, Han, Leia, and Han's supposed wife are escaping from the Imperials in their spaceship.
Huh.
A lot's going on. But there is a scene where Chewie's interrogating someone by, like, dangling them over a ledge and yelling at them in Wookiee speak. And C-3PO is, like, very cheerfully, like, translating. And it's really excellent. Journey to the Shattered Empire, number 1 was really good. Number 2 has really good art, but it doesn't really seem – nothing really seems to happen. That's kind of the bummer about it. I think – it's leading towards something, but it's only a 4-issue mini, and I'm still not quite sure what the point of this book is, other than maybe just showing this family, because it's about a mom, but her husband and her are the parents of one of the main characters from The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gonna like stop picking this up. It's only 2 more issues, but the second issue is a little weaker than the first one.
Right, and yeah, I mean, especially if it's like a 4-issue shot, like usually those really pick up steam. Like issue 4 definitely is usually packed with stuff.
Right, and it's Greg Rucka. I believe in Greg Rucka. He does good work.
There you go. So yeah, I really need to start reading some of these Star Wars books because so many of them sound so good.
Yeah, I definitely recommend the main title. Vader was good for a while. I kind of lost interest, but a lot of people think it's the best book. And a lot of the other ones are just miniseries, man. Lando's a miniseries that I think is ending soon. Princess Leia was a miniseries. The Journey to the Force Awakens is a 4-issue miniseries. Chewbacca is going to be a 5-issue miniseries. There's going to be a C-3PO one shot, which is good. He doesn't need a series. What would he do? Not to say I don't love C-3PO, but what would he do? There's a Kanan the Last Padawan is an ongoing. That's about the character from Rebels.
Which, yeah, I still need to see that because apparently Rebels was amazing.
Yeah, Star Wars has been killing it in the cartoon department.
Yeah. Because I heard Rebels is really good and Clone Wars. It started kind of, you know, rough and very kids show-esque, but finished really strong.
Yeah, I mean, you can easily watch Clone Wars because it's on Netflix. Rebels is not.
Yeah, I think actually Shannon told me, because I had this conversation with him, and he told me that he's got the first season, I guess, of Rebels on Blu-ray.
Oh, cool.
So at some point, I'll just have to borrow it from him.
Sounds good.
So yeah. All right. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it for me and Chris. One last thing before we wrap up. The filthy casual, Catherine Reed, wanted me to tell you she says hi, and I figure I'll give her a shout-out by doing so.
Oh, we'll tell her hi back. I haven't seen her in, I think, at least 4 or 5 years.
It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
All right. So, yeah, I guess that'll do it. Guys, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you in 2 weeks with hopefully some more All New, All Different, because I think by that point another 4 books are coming out.
Oh, definitely a few. Extraordinary X-Men will be out, and I know you and I are looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do love me some X-Men. So, yeah, look for that review next time. Again, thanks for the questions. Thanks for listening.
All right. Goodbye, guys.